Hey there, and welcome back to Holistic Health Masterclass Podcast with me, your host, Brett Hawes. We are up for another awesome episode today, and I don't really have too many announcements, to be quite honest. One announcement that I will make is that we have, as Holistic Health Masterclass, we have our Summer Fresh program out. This is a 7-day menu plan complete with a grocery or shopping list, all of the recipes, the full meal plan, plus the nutrition information. So that's yours free if you want to grab that. Just check out the show notes and there's a link there. And yeah, happy eating. I mean, it's summertime, time to lighten up, get more of the fresh veggies in and so on. Of course, if you are listening to this from the Southern Hemisphere, it is winter. So apologies for that. Right, so today's episode, my good friend Matt Walton joins me, and we talk about all things TCM, or traditional Chinese medicine. I've always been fascinated by ancient healing systems, and for me, TCM was never the thing that really drew me. It was more Ayurveda, and for the longest time, I actually thought that there was almost like identical modalities, if you will, in that Ayurveda was identical to TCM. And I think after this podcast, you'll appreciate that there are some fairly big differences, actually. And we talk about how Ayurveda sort of got frozen in time and how TCM has really evolved to keep up with modern times and treat a lot of modern diseases such as autoimmune disease, leaky gut, and things that were never really around back in the day. We really dive into the fundamentals, right? And, you know, the energetics, the bridging and linking between emotional, psychological states, constitutional types. And I think most interestingly, how five people can come in with the same condition and it's all manifested differently in their body and it requires different treatment. And this really flies in the face of not even just allopathic medicine or doctors. This flies in the face of what naturopaths and nutritionists and functional medicine doctors are doing. So I think that you'll, again, you know, if you've never really heard of TCM or really learned about it, this is a good crash course. And, you know, one thing that that I also find interesting is we talk about diet a lot. And we talk about how digestion was really the key and central theme of TCM, and how if you've never fixed digestion, you're probably never going to fix whatever else you're trying to deal with, right? But more than that, you know, there's huge popularity now with things like the ketogenic diet and the paleo diet. And Matt really gets into a lot of that, where we talk about why these diets may really work for some people and may potentially be disastrous. And by disastrous, I mean harmful for other people. And, you know, when you look at a lot of these diets, especially the keto, it's a very new diet in a sense. And I know that some of you will be objecting to what I'm saying right now, and that it's our default diet and our traditional diet, and it's what cavemen were really eating. But besides all of that, right, it's very new in the modern context. And the question begs whether we're supposed to eat such a high-fat diet. And I'll leave that open for discussion wherever that happens. But when you start getting into the energetics of food and you marry that with constitutional types, in other words, do you have lots of fire? Do you have lots of air? Do you have damp heat? Do you have dry heat? Are you too cold? You know, when you start looking at it from that perspective, and then you look at this one-size-fits-all approach from a dietary and treatment perspective, I think you'll gain a much deeper understanding and perhaps start questioning whether these types of diets are sustainable in the long run for the general population. So I will leave you to ponder that. And I think it's a very interesting discussion, and it's definitely something that's would be a good debate to have. So if you want to have that debate and you want to leave comments, definitely go and check me out on Facebook, connect with me there. And when I do post this on Facebook, I would love to hear your comments and get some discussion going. So you can find me on Facebook. That is Holistic Health Masterclass-Brett Hawes. And as always, if you enjoy the show, please consider subscribing, sharing, and leaving us a review. So I'm going to leave it at that for today. Don't forget to grab your copy of that Summer Fresh vegetarian program. And yeah, enjoy today's show with my good friend, Matt Walton. Hey, Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brett, how's it going?
It is going good. Good to catch up with you, my friend. It's been a while.
It has, yeah.
And I know you've been super busy. You've been up to a lot of cool things, book, right? And you've got some things coming up, which we will definitely dive into as we move forward. But perhaps we'll just start off. Give us a little bit of background about yourself. Like, what do you do? Maybe your training. And, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm an advanced practitioner of Chinese medicine here in Ontario. So it's a regulated. A couple of years ago, or I guess it was 2013. Now the profession was finally regulated. So it's kind of been booming ever since in its like recognition, and you're seeing more and more of it, especially around Toronto. But yeah, so what brought me here to studying that was just my own. Health journey, as I'm sure most, you know, people began by trying to put the pieces back together of their health. You know, I used to have chronic fatigue and anxiety, depression, chronic digestive concerns. And, you know, you would see one practitioner for this and one practitioner for that and one practitioner for this. And pretty much like it was when I started getting into, it was first Tibetan medicine and then Ayurveda and then Chinese medicine, that I started really kind of understanding that these pieces weren't separate. And then one thing led to another, and I kept kind of uncovering more and more until just one day it was like the door opened. I was like, that's it. I got to study this, you know? And so 5 years later, I finished my program, and now 5 years after that, here I am.
Cool. And so you are seeing people in a consulting clinical kind of environment.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I've worked in different spaces, and now I just primarily focus on my home-based practice for now. Yep.
Okay. Nice. Mm-hmm. So, I guess we'll kick things off. You know, today's discussion is really, all about traditional Chinese medicine, obviously. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll just take it from the top and, explain to our listeners a little bit about what traditional Chinese medicine is and mm-hmm. how it might differ from even something, nutrition mm-hmm. or allopathic medicine or anything like that. So, you know, I don't know. Let's just take it from the top and see where we land up.
Okay. Well, Chinese medicine, I think, in its foundation, it's almost a metaphorical type medicine. So, that can get lost on a little bit of people. They weren't so concerned with the subtle, they were concerned with subtle details, but not like on the, on a microscopic sense. They stood back. And that's kind of the primary difference between, like Western or modern or allopathic medicine is, there's a zooming in and that's equally important, but Chinese tended to stand back, as far back as they could and noticed, started making connections over the thousands of years about like this headache when it's also paired with maybe a bloating or maybe a poor menstrual cycle or something. Like, what is this pattern? So really the fundamentals of Chinese medicine is that we're not really separate from nature. The same energies that exist outside us in the natural world are kind of mirrored within us as well. So from that kind of foundational philosophy, we get the symptoms in Chinese medicine. Some people might be familiar with like dampness or heat. These are terms that are basically like symptoms in the body that mirror like expressions of like maybe a damp basement, sort of similar symptoms. So what I like to share with my clients is like, we use the term inflammation all the time in modern, you know, language. Yeah. But really when you actually hear that word inflammation, it's activity that mirrors fire, right? It's a natural phenomenon. So, the Chinese just basically took that concept and went a little bit quite a lot further with it. So instead of saying inflammation, we say heat. So these are scientifically accepted terms, inflammation. So, same with dampness, which is going to be like a heavy mucusy or a yeast kind of environment. They just call it dampness. So from kind of the foundation is, I guess I can even start even by even backing up further. And you start with Chinese medicine by looking at the kind of, everyone's familiar with the yin yang symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's a pretty well-known symbol. Not many people really kind of grasp or like have ever really looked into how deep that can actually go. But that's kind of the core central idea is you have summer and winter, night and day, you know, hot, cold. And as the night turns to day and day turns to night, as summer turns to winter and back again, that movement is what we call qi. It's just
okay.
It's just the function and the movement of life and of everything itself. So when you, what we're trying to do in Chinese medicine is to make sure that the, so how would that, it manifest in our bodies would be the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system, right? Like fight or flight or rest and digest. That's a great example of yin and yang in a biological.
Right, sport. Right.
Right. So we're trying to like make sure that those still the same principles that are existing in outside or in our environment are in harmony just as they are within us. Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And it's very different. I mean, when you start talking like this, so I have a background in Ayurvedic medicine and mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of overlap. So we're really not looking at things in isolation. We're mm-hmm. trying to look at things in a very holistic perspective in the truest sense of the word. Because from my understanding as well, it's also not, you know, we've spoken a lot about just physical, but there's also the emotional, psychological,
absolutely.
The energetic side of things as well. Now, Chinese medicine has elements. Is that, am I using that term correctly? Like we're made up of the five elements? Is that?
No. So okay. yes and no. No. When I think of the elements, like in Ayurveda or in like earth, air, fire, water, like even in mm-hmm. Greek medicine, the way I see those, that actually kind of drove me crazy for a little while when I first started studying school, because I was trying to draw an overlap between the two systems.
That's a dangerous road to go down. Yeah. Sorry to interject here,
oh,
but
it's okay.
I've had so many students who have tried to bridge science-based systems together mm-hmm. with Ayurveda or Chinese medicine and yep. just drive yourself completely crazy, yeah. right? You got to stick with one and just do it fully or abandon it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the way I've come to kind of marry both systems, both philosophies together is, so earth, air, fire, water, and space, kind of that elements is the key word there is the term element. It's kind of like the fundamental elements of physics, right? You have solid, liquid, gas, ether, or plasma, or whatever it is. You have these states, they're states of matter. Whereas the Chinese weren't so much concerned with states. They were concerned with the fluctuations between the states. How does one state turn into the next state? So this is where you get that kind of ties me right back around to that what I was getting at. So when we talk of yin and yang, night and day, summer and winter, obviously summer doesn't just snap into winter and winter doesn't just snap into, right? You have, so from this kind of fundamental duality, then you emerge the third, which is qi. And then from there, this stirs this pot of night and day. And then you have, obviously the next movements after that become evening and morning or spring and autumn. Mm. So these are the kind of movements that exist. So the Chinese took those aspects of the day or aspects of these transformations of the seasons or transformations of life, whether it's these still same principles, you could see the energy of spring is parallel to the energy of the morning. They're both this new growth time, right? And you could say that that's also corresponds to a new life of like maybe an infant or a toddler.
Okay.
So the Chinese, that's how they mapped out their, what they would call elements, but the better term here, and that's why I try to differentiate, is not elements, it's phases.
Okay.
So they're two separate systems. It's best not to kind of draw the overlap between them, but you could, like if you take your hand, what I try to show my clients and stuff is if you take your hand and hold it up, one hand has five fingers, those could represent the five elements. And if you put your other hand over top of it and in between them, the five phases could kind of almost merge in between those states, because it's one's describing the movement of something and the other's describing kind of its more static state.
Right. So yeah. Interlacing the fingers, just for those, those of us listening there. And again, forgive me, I'm not as well versed in Chinese medicine, which is exactly why I wanted you on the show.
Exactly.
So that I could learn myself. Right.
Yeah.
So we talk about these phases, we talk about the mm-hmm. qi and the energy and whatnot. Yeah. Do these phases tie in with body systems or organs or stuff like that?
Yep, you're right on point there. That's exactly where I was going next is that those. So now we were kind of describing these phases of the cycles of nature itself, whether it's nature in human lifespan or in our outer environments. But yes, those phases root back and are seen to be governed by an organ system in Chinese medicine. So let's keep on point with spring, the season we're in now. So when we say that in this case, it's the wood phase. That's the energy that I mentioned a little bit before about, toddler, spring, morning.
Okay.
That energy is all about, you wake up in the morning, you stretch, in the spring, everything's pushing up out of the ground and growing outwards. So the Chinese kind of looked at these phenomena and they said, okay, I mean, they probably didn't quite say this simply, but they looked and said, okay, so for example, a good example here would be circulation. If someone has cold hands and feet, this outward moving energy isn't maybe in harmony. Right. So they attributed this system to what's called the liver system. Now that's often an area of confusion with people. Cause sometimes we use the terms we need like liver, heart, kidneys, but in Chinese medicine, these systems aren't the literal liver. So this is where a lot of scientific.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, when you read articles online, there's overlap. Of course, a lot of times there's overlap, but for example, I try to draw these parallels between with the metaphor of a plant in the ground. So the liver organ system is kind of the embodiment of this wood or spring phase. I try to show this by it's a roots of a plant. In the ground. And then from that root comes pushing out of the earth is a stalk. And now the stalk in Chinese medicine, every organ system has a tissue that it feeds. So the liver nourishes the joints because that's how we push and expand ourselves out into the world. So obviously the actual biological liver has nothing or very little to do with your joints. Right. So, and then each organ system from the stalk, maybe there's a corresponding sense organ. So the Chinese attributed the sense organ of the liver or the spring to the eyes, because this is the time, in a baby's life where the eyes are opening for the first time, the world's this wonderful place. In the spring, everything is so completely vibrant. So they kind of rooted that back. And so by virtue of treating the liver, you inadvertently treat the joints or you inadvertently treat the eyes, the vision improves. And then just as you said earlier, this is how the holistic picture forms. And then, so there's going to be a corresponding emotion as well. So if you're a little tender sprout that's just emerging from a seed under the earth, it takes, even though you're tender, it takes a tremendous amount of force to push, to set your roots down and to push up from the earth. So in Chinese medicine, the emotion in health that's associated with this liver or spring energy is assertiveness. It's this ability to push out into the world, assert yourself, speak your mind. But if it gets into a pathological place, it can invert and become over pushing, which is basically anger, over asserting your boundaries, lashing out, kind of pushing out too far, pushing people back too far. So this is how you can find the holistic picture being formed, is that by treating all these things, it all kind of, all the systems come back online.
Yeah. I mean, clearly quite complex, just in our short discussion here. And I think I've garnered a new kind of appreciation, which is awesome. So, okay. So I think we get the fundamentals.
Yeah, totally.
So I would assume then that someone comes to see you and you're actually looking at all of this stuff, because people are not coming in because they're well, people are coming in because they're sick. And so you would be looking at all of this stuff, in terms of their mental, emotional state, of what physical ailments are going on.
And then obviously using diet herbs mostly to sort of remedy things. Yeah.
And acupuncture, obviously. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So if they come in, yeah, we're standing back and kind of like, I'm trying to glue these pieces together. Like if they have a headache and they're frustrated all the time, then yes, maybe there might be a liver imbalance. So yeah. And then we prescribe these appropriate diets. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is kind of cool. So let's move it forward and let's actually talk about diet. I mean, this is something mm-hmm. that you and I wanted to talk about, and I'm mm-hmm. just going to preface this. Where do we start? The way that the West is looking at diets nowadays, right? I mean, we spoke mm-hmm. off air about the ketogenic diet and how it's become wildly popular. It's the next greatest thing, you know. Same thing with raw veganism, same thing with the paleo diet, same thing with all of these diets, right? And what I've always found interesting is how there's such a huge following for them, but then they typically drop off after a while. Mm-hmm. Also, you have your people that swear by them, and you have other people that are just, you know, didn't work for me at all.
Mm-hmm. So, or even were harmed.
Yeah, or were harmed. Yeah. So perhaps you can elaborate on that, you know, kind of ties in with what we were just talking about. But from a traditional Chinese medicine perspective, mm-hmm. How do you work with diet? Like what do you do?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that I think the West is, or like our modern world at least, is always trying to kind of find the one size fits all, and doesn't really pay attention to exactly what the Chinese were trying to really express, is that life is an ever changing flux. Things are always shifting and moving. So what might work for you, you might feel great with the paleo or keto diet now, or maybe it's more summer appropriate. Maybe it's more, you know, but we are constantly evolving things. Like some symptoms might arise in you, and now all of a sudden, this diet that you were eating might not be the best thing for you. And it might only be a temporary state. Like maybe you have developed some condition and it's only a temporary kind of transient state, but you still have to eat according to the weathers of your body. So that's kind of the best way I look at it, is, you know, the earth is constantly going through seasons, constantly going through mm-hmm. weathers. And what might be true one day isn't going to be true the next. And so it's really, in Chinese medicine, that's why we kind of not laugh, but we kind of have a little bit of a kind of a predictive ability to just be like, okay, well, I can already see that diet's going to be unsustainable for a lot of people, because what happens if, you know, they're eating a high fat diet, and they might, in Chinese medicine, a high fat diet might be fine for some people, but maybe if you have damp heat conditions, a humidity condition in your body, then you might exacerbate or make it worse. So it's kind of like,
in lay terms, my fire is very high, and yeah. if I eat lots of fat, I'm essentially adding oil onto the fire, which yeah. could, in the long run, actually promote more inflammation in my body, right?
Yeah, it could be. It depends on the quality of oils that you're using as well. That's going
to
be...
Well, I think that there's another angle to all of this as well, is... Mm-hmm. You're also talking about people have different constitutions, right? I mean, yeah. on a foundational level, like even if you don't have any disease or illness or there's no pathology mm-hmm. going on a foundational level, I mean, according to Chinese medicine, I know according to Ayurveda, yeah. you have a diet that you should be following for the most part, right? I mean, you should be following that according to your constitution and then changing that with the seasons, right?
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. And even above that, there's kind of, the way I see this, there's a few layers. It's like your kind of ultimate goal would be to be eating according to your constitution and then eating according to the season that you're in, especially depending on your skin color, that's going to be huge too. Like your genetic background and where, you came from. But it, even more important than those two layers is still the current weather of your body. So you, just because you might be in Ayurveda, you may have touched on this in previous podcasts, I'm not sure, but like, you know, you have Vata, Pitta, Kapha. Mm-hmm. In Chinese, that's essentially, Vata is Qi, a Qi type. A Pitta would be a Yang type. And then the Kapha would be a Yin type.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So you have them all still kind of a loose overlap there. So the thing is that someone could be predominantly Vata, or maybe dry and slender in their constitution, but that Vata person might have... let me say this in a different way. So if you have this kind of dry Vata constitution, you tend to want to have more like richer foods that are more maybe moistening and oily. But if that person is a vata, has a damp condition that happened to arise, a weather pattern, then eating those same foods that are normally good for a vata could actually make a problem worse. So it's more important that we pay attention to the current weather pattern, get that weather issue, the signs and symptoms of the body cleared up, and then they can return to a predominantly vata based diet, the constitutional pattern.
So I think what you're getting at, and this is something that I've relayed for many years now, is there's a difference between a therapeutic diet and a constitutional diet.
Well said. Yep. Absolutely.
Right. So you know, if you come in, because I get this all the time, people, I put them on restrictive diets for whatever, and they go, like, am I going to have to eat like this forever? And it's like, no, this is not forever. This is just now, so that we can kind of like get you better. And then after that, then we'll get you back onto, you know, slowly gravitate back into a constitutional diet. So, you know, I think that this is huge, because this is really the sort of fundamental core tenets, if you will, of holistic and natural medicine as a whole. I mean, is not using the cookie cutter, instead understanding the person versus the disease, you know, and really approaching things like that. And it seems to me like that's exactly how Chinese medicine really looks at things.
Yeah. We stand back and look at the environment that the condition is in, like the ecosystem. I like to use the word ecosystem. Like, your body's an ecosystem, as it has weather patterns and signs and symptoms, just like a stream. If a stream's polluted, like you can maybe, you know, scoop out the pollution or filter out the pollution, but you still have to stand back and look at, okay, well, what's the systemic, like what's the
where's it coming from?
What's the source of this problem, where, you know, and we have to address it on a much bigger level.
Well, and this is really, again, now tapping into root cause resolution, versus symptomatic band-aiding. And I mean, you know, practitioners all over, this goes for natural medicine, this goes for allopathic. There's a lot of band-aiding going on, because we're still so accustomed to treating the symptoms. Even with natural medicine, we're treating symptoms and not actually treating the cause. Yeah. And so that's also, I think we're saying the same thing here. And for those of you listening out there as well, you know, if you got stuff going on, I always ask questions, why? You know, so why is that happening? Okay, that's happening because of this. Okay, now why is that happening?
Exactly.
And if you keep cycling back, eventually you're going to come to a root cause or root causes that are probably causing all of your symptoms. Mm-hmm. And when you knock out the root, you know, the other symptoms get better, right? And it's actually a more efficient way of dealing with things if you get into it, right? Because, I mean, you know as much as I do, sometimes it's good to get symptomatic relief. But when you stop doing or taking whatever it is that's helping you with the symptoms just come back and you're still there.
Yeah.
Which doesn't really resolve anything. And we now start going down the pharmaceutical route with supplements, right? And stuff like that. So
yeah, you get like one of those Hydra situations. I like that. What is it? Greek, I think. I can't remember, but it's the, you know, the five-headed monster or whatever. And every time you cut off one head, it springs up another one. So yeah, in Chinese medicine, we call it root branch treatment.
Okay.
So sometimes you do want to treat the root for sure, obviously. Well, you always want to treat the root, but if a person has a severe migraines or something, that's the branch, that's a symptom, but you're going to want to treat that. That's an acute symptom, and they can't get to work. You're going to want to focus
on
that branch.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, they do want to actually feel better. It's not, it's like, you're going to feel better in 5 years. Just stick with me here. You know, it's all good. So very interesting, I find. And, you know, I used to practice Ayurvedic medicine a lot more than I do now. Mm-hmm. And I always just found that you got to go for it full ball, or just don't do it at all, because you can't kind of half-ass it, with it, at least from a practice standpoint, right? I just found that anyway, because then I was starting to try and bring in the Western stuff and the sciencey stuff, and then and I was like, well, this is too crazy. And it was also a very hard sell for people to really live that whole life, right? But something that we also spoke about off air, that is very, very central to Chinese medicine, they really focus a lot on digestion, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the core thing. So when we say the five phases or five elements, well, often people will think, well, there's four seasons. What's the fifth? What's this five coming from? The fifth is the earth itself. It's the stable constant. It's the thing that like all the seasons rotate around. It's the one thing that's always there and always present. And so that organ system that's associated with the earth is the digestive system.
Is that the digestive system as a whole, or are we just talking about stomach?
Pretty predominantly. It's mostly the stomach, and what in Chinese medicine is a bad translation. If any of your listeners look it up, it's something I have to dispel a lot. There's the term spleen that gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
It's the better term is pancreas. It's quite simple. It's just the functions of a pancreas. So though that too, mechanism there of the stomach and pancreas is kind of it literally is in the center of your body. It's almost even the stomach and pancreas themselves are shaped like a little yin yang symbol.
Interesting you say that. Yeah, you're right.
And so that's the earth element. That's what all the other systems depend on. So for example, like if we're having a lot of the times I'll see maybe someone with a menstrual condition or maybe a stress condition or something, and who knows what I'm working with, but if their digestion's not functioning properly, how are they going to absorb the herbs or maximize the herbs that are going to then feed the rest of the system if you can't even absorb them or digest them, or if they're causing bloating or something? So a lot of the times one of the first things I have to treat just to get it out of the way is digestion. So a person might come to me with a blank condition, like whatever it is, and I have to say, okay, well, yes, I'm going to be treating that, but we have to divert our attention first, because your digestion, I know you might not be complaining about it, but this is a bit of a quote, like a mess right now. And we got to get that paired up, like fixed up, because that's going to really slow. If we don't do that, it's going to take a lot longer for us to get you to your other conditions. So people have to kind of get used to that idea that sometimes you have to peel away one layer of an onion first to get down to the next layer of which is what they actually might be seeking.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, chi, we talk about agni, we talk about digestive fire, we talk about all of these concepts. And I mean, they have been very, very central to these ancient traditions, at least the medical, their medical model. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting, I'm a practitioner of iridology, right? And I've always, in my classes, I've always taught this because it blew my mind when I first looked at it, right? When you look at the eye, and I'm going to try and do the best I can here because we're on audio only. If you look at your eye, and I encourage you to go and actually look up a map of iridology, just do a Google search there for an iridology chart and you'll see what I'm talking about, is when you look at the eye, what you see is the stomach is right wrapped around the pupil. And then you see wrapped around the stomach is you've got the small and the large intestine. Mm-hmm. And then wrapped around that is the nervous system, right? So the autonomic nervous system. And then everything outside of that is the rest of the body is basically looks like a dartboard. Mm-hmm. And what happens inside the digestive system, the stomach, the gut, it directly affects the corresponding organ outside.
Yeah.
Outside that nervous system. So, which mirrors exactly what these ancient healing modalities were saying all along. Mm-hmm. And this is why when you look at people, some of them have had sections of their bowel removed, for example, and all of a sudden their heart condition clears up.
Right.
And people are like, how the hell did that happen? Right. And it's because of these reflex relationships. So I find it interesting that, that's one of your sort of core approaches.
Yeah. And that's becoming more and more, maybe I can't really put a number to this, but maybe 50 years ago, this was like blasphemy and unheard of, but now you have, even in the modern medical system, you have like psychoneuroimmunology.
Uh-huh.
Like, right. And you have these terms that are now being married together where it's almost like they're kind of coming at it from zooming in and then kind of building from the almost like the cellular level up, core components up. And what we're doing is kind of the opposite, is we're standing back and kind of learning how to zoom in. And that's why I really think that we're at the edge of a pretty cool medical, I don't know, renaissance. The more that these kinds of things get discussed, and then more and more respect gets drawn to these traditional symptoms, I think that we really could be at the edge of where both systems are finally seeing eye to eye. We might be speaking different languages, but at least we're kind of starting to say the same things.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because the research now on the microbiome, for example, and its impact on all systems in the body. You know, there's different pockets of researchers looking at different, you know, specifics with microbiome and depression and microbiome and inflammation and blah, blah, blah. But then, I mean, there's a huge body of research on the gut-brain connection. I mean, this is now becoming well-established. Mm-hmm. We know things like leaky gut, for example, how it affects the immune system, how mm-hmm. it affects pretty much anywhere in your whole body. So yeah, I think you're right. I think we are sort of hopefully coming to some point of convergence. You know, my concerns are more, you know, obviously we're preaching to the choir here. Like we're looking at it to try and restore function, mm-hmm. where I still feel in many ways medicine is not trying to restore function. They're trying to manage right. the
symptoms, you know,
the symptoms, and trying to manage all the symptoms so that the symptoms are hidden,
yeah, exactly.
without really restoring function, and exactly. that's simply because drugs don't really restore function.
No, there's very few, if any. Like, yeah, I still struggle sometimes. Like in Chinese medicine, like we have tonic herbs, like tonic medicines, and that always kind of and they're like a core group of herbs that are, and a lot of probably your listeners are familiar with the tonic herbs, but like even any layperson's probably heard of ginseng and certain herbs that are relatively common, but the whole idea of tonic or tonifying a system, like rejuvenating and restoring that there's very few, if any, pharmaceutical medications that do that restore the body's strength in by enhancing its own functions, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of always kind of blown my mind that this foundational thing that's been passed down through the millennia, it just is completely absent, helping the body to support its own work.
Well, it's been shunned, right? And yeah. I think that without going too far on a political rant here, I think that there's, you know, there's no money to be made off healthy people.
Right.
So restoring function is not profitable. Mm-hmm. You know, managing symptoms by using medications and everything else, that's profitable. You want repeat customers. And mm-hmm. Again, I'm not bashing the medical system here. There's a time and a place for everything.
Absolutely.
I just don't think that it's the best model for quote unquote curing chronic disease.
Yeah, that's
very, very good for acute. You know, you get hit by a bus, you get bitten by a snake, you break your leg, no mm-hmm. problem. That's great. But if you have a chronic degenerative disease, mm-hmm. it's not what it was designed to do.
Yeah,
and exactly. I think that's why we're seeing the resurgence of natural medicine, which is actually mm-hmm. putting nutrients, whether that be herbals, vitamins, minerals, whatever it is, putting them back into your body if they're lacking, and actually really, you know, restoring function, which is huge.
Yeah. And people are afraid too of like, they want that we've been programmed to think of like, we just want an Advil for that headache to go away. The quick fix. And that's totally understandable. So I like mm-hmm. to, whenever I work alongside, like allopathic or Western doctors with pharmaceuticals, like the way I always try to say is I refer to them as just basically placeholders. They're kind of like, whether it's an antidepressant or something, it's kind of just basically putting the body into a certain state where it's sure, maybe the headache, we've masked the headache or masked the depression. You're just holding its place. But I think that's the real value, where it's good to seek out the trained health, holistic healthcare practitioner, so that I can get under there and start doing the root work of restoring the body. And then when you come off that medication, your symptoms just don't flare up again.
Right.
You've actually done the work. So sometimes you might need that pill just to kind of get you through your work day if you're experiencing some debilitating condition. That's totally fair. But mm-hmm. it, what needs to really be stressed is, and that's where I'm more getting at this idea of a renaissance, is maybe I am seeing more and more, you know, physicians referring out and being like, well, I can give you this drug, but it's not really treating anything, and maybe you should.
That's exciting.
Yeah,
that's exciting, and I'm actually really happy to hear that, because mm-hmm. We don't hear about that very often at all. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple of doctors contact me, you know, wanting to talk more, educate themselves more. Which is kind of cool. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's exciting. Who knows where we're going to be in the next, you know, 10 to 20 years.
Well, I think it's becoming more mainstream awareness into preventative, and that's why these diets and stuff right now are all the rage. And that's why I think it's really, really great, because I think even on a mainstream level, we're really starting to, even though you and I as practitioners might see some of these things as a little misguided from time to time, like this, the latest fad diet, mm-hmm. but at least the general mainstream what do you want to call it, population?
Like public, yeah.
Yeah, public are becoming more and more aware of the foods that they're putting in their body. And that's a pretty powerful thing, right? So it's still a good sign. Whether it's misguided or not, at least the discussion's happening, right? And we're starting to question, well, what are these preservatives in our foods? What are these things? And what works for me? So the discussion's happening. It's a kind of a cool time to be paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, look, without, you know, banging on too much here, I think you and I have both sort of witnessed the explosion, you know, as many of our listeners. I mean, natural medicine as a whole has just become wildly popular, you know, way more popular than when I first started studying it. Even in the last 5 years, it's just, you know, blown up, which is cool. I think it's good. So I want to circle back to digestion here for a minute and just sort of like tap back into what we were discussing. And the reason why I want to do this, right, is, you know, I have a way of working. Some of you listening out there who are practitioners, you have a way of working. And I just want to get Matt's sort of input on this because you have a very different way of approaching this. So, so you get 10 people, and maybe this is a question more than anything. So if I get... let's say 5 people come in and they all have acid reflux, right? So they all have the same symptom, but they're different constitutional types. Would you be looking at them differently? You know, because what I would do and what anyone else in my field as a nutritionist or anything, they would say, well, you need to take digestive enzymes. Perhaps you need to take some HCL and then there you go. You know, that's good enough. But perhaps from your angle, you would look a little bit more broad.
Well, yes and no. And that's funny that you did. I actually share that exact metaphor with all my clients when they come in. I use the 5 people walk into a doctor's office with acid reflux. Like it's the literal same story. Sometimes I might use a headache.
This was not rehearsed, by the way. It was not rehearsed.
That's funny. But so if 5 people come in with acid reflux, yes, we do stand back and say, well, one's overweight, one's underweight, one sweats all the time, one never sweats, one has constipation, one's got diarrhea. I think that's about 6 people we're at now, but like, you know, they're all going to get a different herbal formula. Sure, there might be some overlap on if they all do have this acid reflux, but it depends on the nature of it as well, because acid reflux in Chinese medicine has, I believe, 6 to 7 differential diagnoses, which is different options of what could be caused by. Yeah, you could have liver qi stagnation. You could have heat, because heat rises, so you'll get upward moving symptoms. We have the difference between an excessive heat, so like a heat or a fire, but there could also be a heat that's caused by deficiency. Like it's not that there's too much heat, it's that there's not enough of the cooling principle. So and then either way, the symptoms are still this upward moving energy because heat tends to rise, and maybe that person might have headaches, you know, but so there's lots of different things. Or if a person has too much excessive heat, then they're going to sweat all the time. If a person's heat is due to a lack of the cooling principle, they might only sweat at night. So it gets very nuanced. And so maybe, of course, there's some of the herbal formulas might have that still 2 herbs in there that are going to specifically address the acid reflux. But a lot of the times, like when I hear like naturopaths or other practitioners who kind of, you know, throw HCL at the issue, my question is, again, you kind of touched on this at the start, is like, well, why is the stomach not producing enough stomach acid to begin with? And so we back up and kind of, bitters are a very big aspect in Chinese medicine. They direct qi downwards. That's their movement of the herb. Like every herbal flavor and every, I know Ayurveda is similar to this too, that flavors have an action and a direction. Mm-hmm. So bitters direct qi downwards, and bitters are known even in the Western sense of helping to benefit stomach acid. So what the Chinese were saying was that by having stomach acid replenished, the digestive movement, we want digestion to go down.
Yeah, it's one-way traffic. I mean,
it's one-way traffic. Yeah. So when it's reversed in Chinese medicine, we call that rebellious qi. It's okay, going in the opposite direction, which is rebellious. So we want to revert that and go down. So yeah, so you can throw digestive enzymes at it, and there's no harm at taking those. It's a supplement, It's kind of supporting the body with what it's deficient in, but the ultimate, in a way that's still no real different than taking a medication in the way I see it.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, so it's still, there's still no harm, but we got to get to at the root.
Something just sort of came up that I think is worth discussing. Mm-hmm. And perhaps there's a very simple answer, perhaps there's no answer at all, as time has moved forward, I think that we have started to see diseases and ailments that maybe weren't around 6,000 years ago, mm-hmm. where, you know, the manuscripts and the sort of way that things have been approached, they didn't address that. And I know from an Ayurvedic perspective, I mean, if you get into traditional Ayurveda, they still talk about eating wheat. They still talk about, you know, boiling your dairy and blah, blah, blah. And I know, I mean, now in a modern context, there's a ton of people who are, you know, reacting to dairy, reacting to wheat and whatnot. But I guess, like, from a medical standpoint, I'll just throw something out there. Something like leaky gut, for example, right? I mean, leaky gut, I'm sure that it was happening over the span of time, but perhaps they didn't know that that was going on. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The cool thing is that, Chinese medicine was never frozen in time. In my research, putting one form of medicine down and another one, you know, I don't like doing that. But the interesting thing that I've learned is that in Ayurveda, they tend to kind of hold the Chakara Samhita, I forget, like the text, they kind of revere them and almost treat them as a holy text that can't be
altered. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't be altered. Whereas the Chinese were much more pragmatic and kind of a little bit more like just kind of didn't give a shit kind of people. Yeah. And they're always modifying, always commenting. So though, even though we have thousands of years of texts that like the Nei Jing, which is one of the oldest textbooks on earth, but there's literally thousands of years of commentaries on it and discussions and translations. So the medicine was never really frozen in time. So this is why you have, even in Beijing and in the hospitals in China, they have Chinese medicine wings, like entire aspects are fully integrated with modern medicine. And they'll refer you to the other wing to get a herbal formula. And you come back over there for, you know, to treat your autoimmune condition. So Chinese medicine's never really, like I said, been frozen in time. It's still progressing. There still is new research from the TCM perspective, the TCM treatment. A lot of that stuff is, it's in Chinese. I don't have personal access to it. A lot of what we get in the West is a very distilled down version of what's happening in China. But
TCM light.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's actually, or Maoist TCM. But a good example, I think, is autoimmune stuff. So there is, because that is definitely something that didn't exist, 2,000 years ago, as far as I can tell, in my research, like it's been, you can kind of draw some.
I think that autoimmune, like I've done, there's a couple of podcasts on autoimmune. Mm-hmm. I've done, there's another one which will be coming up in the next while as well.
Cool.
And I mean, that's even to be frank, I mean, I think that's very, very recent. Like I'm talking like even within the last 10, 15 years, maybe even 5 years, that it's really, autoimmune is like this big thing all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So
catch-all term.
Yeah. So I think you're they're actually now working with the system to like update it with
in a way. Back to your leaky gut, that's a good example. It's kind of this dual approach, is that, at least in my understanding, is that, so yes, leaky gut is, you know, maybe it's because of the sheer amount of antibiotics. This was never used in the past that created, you know, the perforation and of the intestinal, who knows. Mm-hmm. There's all these different,
the chemicals, the virus
factors. But the Chinese, what the research is okay, well, do we have parallel, did the Chinese describe parallel conditions? Do these exist in the literature? And then also, you know, what is the research in the scientific sense? Like, what are the research on the herbs that can be used to address it? Can we craft new herbal formula combinations?
Interesting.
You know? And ultimately, the same principles. That's the kind of cool thing about these medicines, is that the same principles still apply. It's almost, sometimes when people come to me with a condition that might be a modern condition, a lot of the times it's, as a practitioner, it's very easy to zoom a little bit too much into this quote leaky gut and use that term. But really, I have to often throw the entire that entire model out of my mind and be like, I'm a TCM practitioner, stand back.
Yeah,
ignore this leaky gut idea. What is the person's signs and symptoms expressing? What are the core symptoms, and what are the symptoms that are, you know, and treat the person. And then by virtue, the leaky gut might magically just reverse itself.
Yeah. So I guess what you're saying in a nutshell is really not treating the disease, but treating the person.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a very patient-centric kind of model versus disease-centric.
Yeah, and the leaky gut just happens as a side effect to clear up when you do that. It becomes a side effect.
Well I guess side effects, maybe it's downplaying thing. It's a good side effect, sure. But maybe it's actually just the body rebalancing itself. Right?
Exactly.
It's coming back into balance. So cool. Well, Matt, it's been a super enlightening discussion. Thank you so much for sharing all things TCM with us. And I definitely got schooled today. There were a lot of things I didn't know. So my knowledge has increased, and I'm sure that a lot of folks listening to this out there also got some benefit. But before we let you go, maybe just how can people get in touch with you? Have you got anything going on right now that you want to share with us? You mentioned books, so perhaps you can just touch on that.
Sure. Yeah, that's. I got two. You can find me anywhere online. If you go to my website, my business is Roots to Sky, ROOTSTO, Sky, SKY.com, because you treat the roots to reach the sky. And so if you go to my website, you'll find that there is, I released my Inspired Health Handbook. So that's a good kind of like thing that we're talking about now. And it's basically just the. Years, it took me years to write this. It started off as my diet plans that I would craft out for my patients or my clients. And then over time, I just kept adding more and more and more and more. And now it's an 85 page, you can get it as an ebook online.
Cool.
And then right now.
And so what is that all about? Is it nutrition based?
It's all nutrition. Yeah. So that's, it's entirely nutrition, how to start to recognize some of the signs and symptoms that we talked about here today.
Nice.
That are going on in your body. And then I've created out, it's very unique and very like vivid book of, tables, charts, foods, the descriptions, everything. It's kind of like an all-in-one package of we get into eating seasonally in there. It's really good. Yeah.
Check out the show notes, guys. If you're listening to this, I'm going to throw that link down in the show notes so you can get that from Matt. And what else you got going on, Matt? You got some kind of program coming up?
Yeah, I just I launched it yesterday to my newsletter list. It's spring. Speaking again of seasonal eating, now is the time of year to shed off all that hibernation energy. So I've just released it's called Cleansing Revitalized program. And so why I call it Cleansing Revitalized is that it gets into this idea of everyone's doing these cleanses, but is it the right match for you and your body in the here and now? And so I really kind of tease out and break apart these ideas. And Chinese medicine asks, what are we cleansing? Not just these kind of ideas that I'm going to quote, go on a cleanse, but what are we cleansing based on the signs and symptoms of the body? So I kind of go through, teach the listeners. It's a presentation in a that you can download with all this, what's the word? Not homework, but information packages that are coupled alongside that. So you can kind of get really educated about, okay, well, I'm seeing that I have damp symptoms. So how can I cleanse this dampness? So we start to get in a little bit more detailed about what are you cleansing and how to listen to the signs and symptoms of your body rather than just doing a blanket box cleanse that you
buy.
Right
on. Okay. Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. So again, I'll put everything down here in the show notes. And Matt, thanks again for coming on to the show. And
Absolutely, good
to hang out with you and to catch up. And,
for sure.
We'll catch up with you soon. So folks, I hope you enjoyed the show for today. And as always, if you did enjoy the show, please consider sharing, subscribing, leaving us a review. Basically just whatever you can do to help us get the word out. On that note, last time I checked, we have tens of thousands of downloads right now. So I just want to thank you for that. I'm truly blessed and humbled that you are getting some value out of this. And I think the last time I checked as well, 45 different countries, which is pretty cool. Wow. So wherever you are in the world listening to this, thank you for your ongoing support. And I hope you continue to listen to the awesome shows that we're bringing you. Matt, you have yourself an awesome day, brother. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, we will for sure. Thanks, Brett. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, take care, everyone. Enjoy your day.